Item number 6, 4500, District Attorney, page 220.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Supervisors.
Go ahead.
Thank you very much. Pleased to be here. I see that there are generally four areas that may be of relevance and discussion for this budget hearing. And first and foremost would be an update, if I could, which is, relates to previous funding, which is coming to fruition right now. And that involves the redesign, remodeling of a specific location in the safety building that will be directed to unified services for our domestic violence victims. We anticipate that that should be opening in approximately a month or 2 months, and I would really be pleased, quite frankly, if the board members had an opportunity to come and see what we're doing with that space. I think it's exciting. It's going to give us an opportunity to provide better services to not just the victims of domestic violence, but also their families. And we anticipate coordinating that very closely with the Sojourner Family Peace Center and the services that they provide to our victims and their families out in the community. So I offer that as a thanks for foremost, but also an invitation to please come see that. Related to that is another significant investment by the county board has been in the Maurice Pulley Witness Protection Unit. The two issues are closely related in that I would say probably 70% of our witness protection services are directed towards victims of domestic violence and family violence as a whole. And we have now been recognized nationally as a model for witness protection services. And we've seen significant increases in our ability to protect victims, address their needs during the pendency of a criminal case. And we've seen significant results in terms of the outcomes of those cases. It's no secret that domestic violence cases present significant challenges to our victims. The most significant challenge is to keep them engaged and safe during the pendency of that case by being able to direct our resources specifically in that area. We've gone periods, for example, where for the first time in you know, almost 20 years of experience, I've seen us succeed in court on contested jury trials, sometimes 15, 16, 17 jury trials in a row, where we hold the offender accountable and protect the victim, and we're able to do it at increasingly serious levels where there's often a risk of death or serious bodily injury. Working closely with our law enforcement partners, have done extensive training on identifying the needs and risks posed in the family violence circumstance. But what I would just indicate to you is since you provide that funding, we've seen an exponential increase in the need for those services. And I can just assure you that we're fully engaged in that effort and will continue to be so. I know that there will, and I would ask Deputy District Attorney Martin to address the issue of victim services compensation. That's just there is an issue related to that. You may recall that last year we were significantly underfunded by the state in those areas, and there's been some change to those numbers that I'll have Mr. Martin address with you. There's also a request in this budget for the addition of 7 investigators, and I suspect that there would be some questions related to that. I'd be happy to answer that as well. It's my position. 2 of those positions are going to be directed to increasing the capability and effectiveness of our child support unit. The child support enforcement is critical to providing services for children in particular who oftentimes come from significantly disadvantaged circumstances. There are significant backlogs of child support cases. I'll indicate to the board right now it's not our intention to sort of over-criminalize that process. Our goal is to identify sort of the prolific offenders, the classic deadbeats, as it were, and direct our resources to those individuals. The way it always unfolds is there has to be notice, there has to be contact, and there has to be process. That would certainly continue. Working with Mr. Sullivan in child support, we're already in the process of narrowing down those most prolific offenders. But we also want to assist in the process of getting people into the accountability portion of it, and do so in a reasonable way so that we're recouping as many of the costs as we can for the county, and we're providing the resources for those children as they're growing up. So that's two of the positions that would be on the table today. The additional five positions relate to the request by the superintendent of the House of Corrections to have the capacity to hold accountable those individuals who escape from the House of Corrections, who fail to report to the House of Corrections, or who fail on electronic monitoring or other community release during the portion of their sentence. This is a policy decision that is really ultimately the board's decision, and it comes to a head at this point in time because with the disaggregation of the House of Correction from the Sheriff's Department, by default what happened there is, since there's only two sworn law enforcement agencies in the county right now, it's the District Attorney's Office and it's the Sheriff's Department, when the authority was returned to the House of Correction and the superintendent, they lost the ability. They have no sworn law enforcement capacity right now. I believe that it is absolutely critical to the public safety mission of the House of Corrections and all other public safety officials that we effectively address the needs of holding people accountable, making sure that they report when they're told to report, that if they fail to comply with the conditions of their release, that they're accounted for quickly, and that those who escape are quickly found and, again, brought back into the proper conditions of confinement. So and the reason I say it's a policy issue is I want to make it perfectly clear. I am not seeking to do any empire building right here. We were asked by the House of Correction and by the county exec during this interim time period while we moved from the superintendent model to from the unified model with the Sheriff's Department, that we assist them so that they would not fail in this mission. And I considered it my obligation to assist in any way I could, so my investigators have been working closely with Carrie McKenzie and with the superintendent to address this need in the interim time period. We are more than willing to continue doing that, but in order to do it, we're going to need the resources to do it in fairness and to do it effectively. I'm, again, more than willing to do so. I think it makes sense. It is actually fairly consistent with the model that we employ with witness protection nowadays, and that is to quickly find people and hold them accountable. So that's one of the reasons that as we've done this for in the interim time period for the last few months, we've been successful at it. It's put a significant resource constraint on our office, but we've been effective in doing it, and I will make the commitment to you, the assurance to you, that if we are given this mission, that we will do it effectively and we'll do it cost-effectively as well. And that's just the commitment I make to you. But in the end, I'm not engaging in any judgments on whether or not that should be done by the DA's investigators or by sheriff's personnel. All I'm indicating is there's a need right now for it. We're jumping in to fill that need, and we're more than willing to do so if we're adequately resourced in the future. And then just as the fourth and final is my understanding is that there is a I think there was a miscalculation with respect to the district attorney's budget, and I believe that Mr. Fudge is going to address that issue as well. And so those were the four issues that I thought I would raise, and then I'm more than happy to take any questions on that or any other subject that the chairman or any of the board members may have. Thank you.
Mr. Fudge may want to...
Sure. Mr. Chairman and Supervisors, we discovered late last night that I think due to a slight miscommunication and an error on our office's part, the revenue for the 2013 version of the JAG grant related to the community prosecutors was added back into their budget. However, the expenditure authority was not. That has about a $208,000 impact. But we also got a another update late last night that they're on the child support side. The GPR formula funding may be better than the last version by about $223,000. So fortunately, those two items, do offset. Again, we apologize for that issue. There is also, I think, one other item just related to this while we're on the topic that could have an impact on the budget. I understand at the federal level, as part of the deal to keep the government open and on the debt ceiling, there is a impact, a possible very positive impact to our fringe budget that we may need to work out. I can work with Mr. Cady on towards the end of this week, but that's one item that may also have an impact. So we can work on fixing this item in the DA's budget with some of the fixes that are continuing to develop as we go through. So again, we accept responsibility and apologize. As I mentioned, when we began this process, we had a significant amount of turnover and a very young office, and I take responsibility for some of these mistakes that were made. So just wanted to keep you up to date on that.
And if I can just add, Mr. Chair, I understand that these things happen. I have complete confidence that that this will be addressed, and I am not assigning any blame for that. I'm glad we caught it early, and I'm confident we can address it.
Supervisor Johnson, Supervisor Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Periodically, my concern is about community prosecutors, and I just heard what Mr. Fudd said related to the community prosecutors. So, Mr. District Attorney, does it sound as if there's going to be any reduction of staff? Because the community prosecutors are very, I should say, accepted and popular among constituents for the work that they do. They establish themselves as, although they're attorneys, that they are attorneys who are able to interface with constituents. And the police and law enforcement in an even-handed way of sorts. So I'm very concerned about them from year to year to year. And I just wanted to know, with the funding changes, federal, what otherwise, even though Mr. Fudge just gave us a deficit and an offset, how many are you going to have the same number of community prosecutors, the desired number of community prosecutors?
Mr. Chair and Supervisor Johnson, thank you very much for first, I will just in general describe what the challenges are for the community prosecution program. The community prosecution program was entirely federally funded at its inception, and since that time it remains federally funded. However, we've diversified the source of the funding over years, and it's evolved from JAG Byrne and federal justice money to now being about 50% federal funding, either through direct or discretionary grants, and then also the community development block grants have provided significant funding for those community prosecutors. I agree with you wholeheartedly that that is the cornerstone of our office's commitment to community-based solutions and working closely not just with community-based police officers but also with those entities within the communities that are most crime impacted. So we are always paired with neighborhood-based organizations. We are always focused on neighborhood stability issues and neighborhood safety issues that are driven from the ground up, and we collaborate closely with community developers such as LISC and other entities located that anchor those neighborhoods, including our school system. We have a prosecutor that works full-time with Milwaukee Public School System. I currently have 5 community prosecutors that are funded. I anticipate working closely with the city to be able to reintroduce 2 more so that we have our ideal function is to have a community prosecutor in every police district station, and also service West Allis and South Milwaukee as a commitment to that. Working closely with Dr. Mallory O'Brien, she has found additional funding, and we are hopeful that we're actually going to be able to, again, increase through grant funding our community prosecutors by an additional two positions. And so they would be focused on slightly different things, ideally addressing the issues of violent crime in particular. But the but our commitment is unwavering. With respect to this specific issue related to the budget, I would just turn briefly to Jim Martin. If he has anything to add to that, I'd be happy to have him do that.
And I would say, I would add that the Community Justice Council, the existence of it with Dr. O'Brien being able to help is well justified.
Thank you. And I'll just, you know, I'll indicate, you know, if I could echo one thing. When I made the commitment to placing skilled prosecutors out in the community to help them solve problems, I think the community had legitimate concerns about that. The sense was that, you know, you're sending DAs out there to be super cops. The word I now get back from the community echoes what you've said, Supervisor Johnson, and now I'm told that I want my community prosecutor back by people in the community. They look on them as their prosecutors. They're not my prosecutors, they're their prosecutors. And that's an important, that's part of the message that we you know, aspired to achieve, that people looked on prosecutors as people they could go to get problems solved, and they could trust working with them and with the other agencies that we collaborate with in addressing public safety. I spoke with Jim Martin. He has no addition. He has no concerns.
Thank you.
Mr. Rutherford.
Thank you. Thank you both for being here, Inspector Buddy, too. And you hit the heart of the policy decision here I think we have to make. I appreciate you being a candidate. And, of course, like any good soldier, which you are, you know, if you're given a responsibility, you're going to do your best of your ability. Like you said, I'm sure you will. I guess my question gets to the heart of the policy decision where, you know, we're knocking out the apprehension unit, so you have more responsibilities. You've got five new people and two, you mentioned, with the child support. Can I ask you candidly, is this what you should be doing? Are these functions that your office should be in? You know, we're going to get to the sheriff's budget later today, maybe ever, and, you know, we're going to be looking at what are the responsibilities, what are the duties, you know, that the budget's here. Should you be involved in that, very honestly? I mean, you say you'll do it if you have to. It wasn't, I'm presuming, like many things, we're supposed to be making policy, and then we're, you know, we're the ones who make difficult decisions here. This, and all this spat going on between the county executive and the sheriff's office, and we go to other people and we drop things off. We'll hear from the sheriff. I'm sure he's not going to like some of these things. But I guess you heard my question. That's
sure.
My question.
No, and thank you. Again, Mr. Chairman and Supervisor Schmidt, it is a fair and it's a very direct question, and the way I would answer it is directly is that in an ideal world, I use my investigators for essentially strategic purposes. They fill in areas that law enforcement traditionally does not have the capacity or the resources to address. So for example, when it became glaringly obvious that witnesses and victims in our community were not receiving sufficient resources to feel safe when they came into our system, that was a critical need that had to be filled. And again, with the support of the county board, with the support of the Department of Justice, we filled that. And what we've learned since then is, if you'd asked me back in 2007, did I think that it was the role of the DA's office to run a witness protection unit, I would say no. That traditionally was not. Now, my view has changed 360 degrees. Now I think, and again, I make arguments to other. I was just at a roundtable for major city DAs in Washington D.C. last week, and this was a subject of discussion. As I've indicated, you need to get credit and be proud of the work that is being done in witness protection. It is nationally recognized now, and more DAs now understand that it really is our responsibility, and that nobody is better suited to doing this kind of work than the people that are working closest with their victims and their witnesses. And doing it collaboratively with law enforcement is critical. So now we move to a new era in which, again, the county board rightfully should take credit and pride in the work that you've supported when we have tried to redesign our criminal justice system so that we more effectively assign risk to the people that are encountering our justice system, and so that we make informed decisions about what we do with people based on the risks that they pose and the needs that they have to have addressed. So as you have supported universal screening, that has allowed us to do a much better job of informing decisions of who we give traditional prosecution with jail and prison to versus those individuals that we try to address the victim's needs and the offender's needs and do it in a way that leaves them in the community and under the greatest control in the community with the lowest cost to the system and the lowest number of people in jail and prison. Over years, I think the numbers support this approach, and clearly the evidence supports it, not just in this state but throughout the country, that this is the right direction to go. So this brings me to the issue of what we do then with people. Yeah, and I know it's it's critical.
We are working on
the part. Well, it's now become important for us to acknowledge that using the same systems that we use to address risk when we initially encounter people has to be done when people are in jail and before they're released from jail as well. And so there has to be that close linkage between all the partners, and so that we're working closely together. We have that relationship with the House of Correction. We have the relationship with the court system. We have the relationship with our law enforcement partners. It makes sense for us to continue this mission, and we're willing to do so with these additional resources. And as I indicated, it is consistent with our approach to victims, in that they don't stop being victims simply because the person has been convicted and sent to the House of Correction. So we often see an intersection between individuals that have been convicted, put out the House of Corrections, who might be going on supervision in the community, but who are still potentially posing a risk to the victims. So all of these issues are now directly linked. Again, in the ideal world, we wouldn't have to have this argument because these would be functions that would be done, by the respective agencies already. And they were done previously by the Sheriff's Department. I'm not, this is not a criticism of the Sheriff's Department. When they had that unified control, they were doing it. They are not doing it now. It's got to be done. If we pick it up, we'll do it well, and I think it will actually enhance our ability to do other things. But that's the best answer I can give you right now, Supervisor, is that it's a need that has to be addressed. We'll do it very well, and we're more than willing to do it.
Well, it was a great answer, but I'm not sure you answered my direct question. Is there, everything's kind of supposedly data-driven by the county
executive.
That's right. And you find some things aren't data-driven the other day, but is this a data, can I get a quick answer?
And sure.
And maybe someone else has the answer. It's always hard to compare Milwaukee County. We always kind of have these other comparisons all the time. Maybe it's not always fair, but is this where the trend is going? Is there a reason besides, doing something to the sheriff, why should these functions be handled by your office rather than the sheriff's? Or is there, how are most of the time these functions handled? Are they most often done by the sheriff rather than the DA? But not
I would say I would say yes.
All right, that's all I want to hear.
Most circumstances.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So you're doing it because you have to do it. And then the other thing is with the funding. You always have to look at the funding. That's always the second thing besides policy. And I appreciate your answers, by the way. And we've done a lot of things because we have confidence in your office and following up on the things. A big part of the office, of course, and all the DAs is the funding you get from the state, particularly in the federal government. But then, you talked about the victim witness program. There's the other significant increase in positions there. You get significant increase in positions. We just went through the main ones. I saw in both these instances you're talking about, will they be kind of offset by some partial funding? So in both these instances, with the five we just talked about, and then the 3.5, positions in the victim witness program, So what do we make up the gaps? Is the gaps in the budget? If we don't get the kind of funding we expect, like we get in many other areas, then where do we make up this funding?
Yeah,
both instances I'm talking about, and I guess I'd be done. Thank you.
Yeah, my understanding is that this is budget neutral, and that the positions are offset in the general budget. So I don't believe that there is any increase, if I'm not mistaken.
Supervisor Schmidt, if I might add to that, the five positions in the apprehension unit are budget neutral with regard to the Sheriff's Department. The victim witness issue has to do with a funding level. The state in the last biennium estimated a reimbursement rate of around 41%.
Yeah.
It came in at 46%. So we planned for to be low, and we got a blessing.
When did that ever happen? Yeah.
Well, and then this year, they're estimating in the next biennium 55%.
I saw that.
And Jim Martin, who has always been very fiscally conservative, and we have a 21-year record of running a surplus, he estimated at 50%. So we're underneath the estimate, and that's why we think we can fill those positions.
Got it. Thank you.
Well, and DAS is kind of saying that's their answer is correct. Okay. And I guess this helps me, and maybe it should help us all as you know, making these policies. If we're, you know, looking and changing duties, if they're cost neutral, if they can be effectively done, and you know, we should be looking at that and asking the sheriff the same kind of questions too, I think. So, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, I'm sorry. I
will just get behind us now. But.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Supervisor Jurisic. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for coming today, gentlemen. It's always a pleasure to see you here at this wonderful time in our cycle. That said, curious about the, of course, the seven additional investigator positions. And a good note, is it five of them will be making up for the apprehension unit?
Correct.
Okay. Understanding the perceived value of that, do you guys have numbers, hard numbers for, say, people that have gotten away, people that should have been rounded up that weren't? Can you provide those to the committee?
Sure. I believe Chief Investigator Buddy can do so, and also I know that Carrie McKenzie is here and could address those issues as well. But David, if you would, please.
I can talk historically about the referrals that have been made to our office from the House of Correction and the Sheriff's Department when it comes to escapes. The current volume, since the House of Correction was split off earlier this year, would be best addressed by the House of Correction. Historically, in 2006, there were about 150 escapes referred to our office. In 2007, there were about 170 escapes, and then in 2008, it dropped to a little over 100 escapes. Then the Sheriff's Department took over the House of Correction and also dramatically cut back the electronic monitoring program, and the number of escapes dropped to less than 20 a year. And then now that the electronic monitoring program has been re-implemented and dozens of people are being released, and as the program grows, we are expecting a trend to show an increase. And there are also different components, again, of what an escape consists of. You can have an escape when someone cuts a bracelet who's already an inmate at the House of Correction, or you can have a fail to report to the House of Correction. And that's another thing that we'd be addressing in the apprehension unit. There are multiple tiers of types of escapes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor Jersey.
Thank you. Could we get those statistics on the that you just gave us on the electronic monitoring? They would be useful, especially the historical data.
I can certainly produce that for you.
Thank you. A couple things. First of all, on the witness protection program. If you recall, we have a name for that program. That's the Maurice Bully Witness Protection Program. And the reason I like to
Maurice Bully Jr.
Jr., thank you. To state that is because too often we get a very terrible incident to remind us why we need programming. I suspect, having listened to the DA's comments about the jury verdicts in domestic violence, we had a very high-profile death in domestic violence this year, and really the peers that serve on juries are aware of that, and they hear these things and respond. Unfortunately, you don't get to just react to things like that. You have to be proactive, but I think the board has been very proactive in the domestic violence. I'm very interested in seeing the new office space, and please send me an invitation. Which gets me to the facilities decisions. Mr. Buddy, are you part of Julie Esch's committee on the whole facility redesign strategic planning piece?
No, I was not invited to be a part of that.
I would really ask that you contact Julie Esch, because some important decision makings are going forward as we speak. The C.B. Richard Ellis report certainly had some recommendations surrounding the safety building. I recall the tour you gave a number of board members to look at the safety building. That those are going to be hard decisions. You helped, you know, point out both sides of that with regard to the safety building. I think some creative thinking has to go around that inner core of the jail cells. And it sounds like the committee is getting close to decision-making on that, which might be we do nothing, which I think is a bad decision myself. But I would really invite you to try to make sure you get heard a little bit by those decision-makers before all of that gets set in stone. You know, I was disappointed in this year's budget with regard to facilities decisions. We don't seem to be making a lot of progress on that. I'm going to keep harping on it. So, but I really would invite you to please contact Julie Esch.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on. House of Correction. Did I misunderstand your comments, DA, that while you're willing to provide the additional investigators, which will be needed, and as we embrace electronic monitoring again for all kinds of reasons, including good outcome-based testing on this, that you are under-resourced for that? Or were you making a request of this board that you're going to need additional resources? Could you clarify that?
I certainly will. So the function of making sure, the function that was traditionally done by the Sheriff's Department Apprehension Unit ceased being done when the transition took place. We were asked as an interim to step in and continue doing that with our existing resources. And we agreed to do that and have been doing so. If we are to continue doing that and to do it effectively and to do it safely, we have come in with a request for 5 based on a very close analysis of what we would legitimately need. I think the previous unit was 6 persons from the Sheriff's Department. We are asking for 5. If you know, in the ideal world, you become so effective at it that you could reduce the number of failures to appear. We'll work closely with the court system to address some of the issues that lead to that, to quickly apprehend people. And if in doing so we achieve enough efficiency, these are individuals that would certainly be capable of doing other functions as well, which would be primarily directed at witness protection, because it's a consistent mission. And again, you know, I can just indicate that our, you know, since we started in 2009, we made 26 arrests related to witness intimidation or disruption. 2010, it was 44. In 2011, it was 59. And in 2012, it was 93. So you've seen every single year an increased use of these resources. And I anticipate that we would be able to use those same resources consistently.
Okay, and I appreciate that, and I'm sure there are some dynamics there. So, and just so I understand the budgetary, am I correct? We moved 5 positions out of the sheriff's budget to assist with electronic monitoring at the House of Correction, but that money was moved into the DA's budget. Is that a fair statement?
Chairman, supervisors, we eliminated the 5 deputy positions, so we unfunded them and moved the funds to the DA's office in order to fund the new investigator positions. So the people aren't moving, just the dollars.
Okay, so we're losing deputies having done the service, and instead we're going to have investigators doing the service in the DA's office?
That is correct, Supervisor.
Tell me, do investigators have arrest authority?
They do. They are sworn law enforcement officers and have to be certified, and their jurisdiction is anywhere in the county, same as a sheriff's deputy.
Right, and I imagine it has to be done that way because sheriff deputies are under the authority of the sheriff.
Correct.
And investigators are under the authority of the elected DA.
That's correct.
Okay, I get that piece. But for dollars, it was a pretty even trade-off, or is it more or less? How did those positions translate?
Chairman, supervisors, the district attorney investigator positions are approximately $2,000 more than a sheriff deputy one, which are currently all at the top of their pay range in a step 10, so it's about $90,000 to $92,000.
Okay, thank you for that. Moving on, the miscalculations, Mr. Fudge, that you defined, there was a miscalculation in the JAG grant, but you indicated there was monies in the community support that was unexpected. Does that automatically offset the same service area? I'm a little confused about that. I mean, you seem to say it's going to net out, and yet I think they are different services that are being. So could you expand on that, please?
Sure, Mr. Chairman and Supervisors. The $208,000 of revenue is from the JAG grant, the 2013 that was adopted, I believe, in the July cycle. So funding for those community prosecutors through part of next year. Sort of similar development that we received, and I think this item will come up later, is that in the appropriation for contingencies, there was $700,000 set aside for child support services based on some news that we had received from the Department of Children and Families that they were not going to give us the increase in GPR that we had anticipated based on the 2000 the biennial budget. We've been receiving updates on how that formula will change. It's kind of going through its process. We had received some good news that maybe we would only need about $150,000 of that. Then we received some bad news that we might need more of that. And late last night, and I'll defer to Mr. Sullivan when that budget comes up, it sounds like we may only need about another $200,000 of that. So sort of some a late-breaking, maybe a good news thing that sort of offsets the mistake that was made in our office. So that funding is in the appropriation for contingencies.
Oh, it's in the appropriation for contingencies.
Correct.
Well, here's a simple question. Are we the DA has presented a budget to us. Are we losing services in either of those areas?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, no. Based on sort of the updates that I described, it would be a simple shift of funding out of appropriation for contingencies into the Office of the District Attorney to provide that expenditure authority.
You are going to provide a memo for all of these transfers, the whole piece. So thank you.
Can I just follow up on the last point you made?
All right, very quickly.
Yeah, quickly. Because, you know, you're saying, well,
we're not finished.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Yeah, there was this. What was the amount the mistake that was made?
208,000.
$208,000, but then you're saying, well, it's offset by this, you know, sort of found money, but you'd sort of already reported this found money to us. You said, well, we probably aren't going to need this, probably need maybe 150. So it's not like, this isn't like late breaking news that this $200,000 is coming for child support. We knew it was coming, and you're just kind of trying to kind of soften the blow a little bit, like, oh, we could just talk about this.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, we reported the child support information sort of as we knew what was going on. We knew there was a possibility we might need all 700. As of a week ago, it was maybe only 150. Now it's probably only 300. Now we might need 370,000. So there's, as the child support issue has moved around, that funding that we've set aside in the appropriation for contingencies is may be available, and so I just wanted to an update also on the other item. There could be another significant change, so I just wanted to first of all apologize and accept responsibility, but also since we're on that topic, make sure that there are other items that may also change as well. So
yeah, well, Terry Cooley taught me that lesson. Just because it's in the budget doesn't mean really it's going to be done. I mean, in a way, it's a fictional document, but we're trying to outline what reality is going to look like. Anyway, that's just a comment. on the sequester losses, did you lose any significant funding through the sequester?
No, not at this time.
That's good news. The community development block grant funds, you've got, you do have two positions in West Dallas and South Milwaukee, and I've gotten much more involved in understanding community development block grants, and, you know, you've got City of Milwaukee, then you've got West Dallas, Wauwatosa with their own piece, and then you have the rest of the counties. My question is the South Milwaukee community prosecutor come from the county portion of the block grants? The West Dallas comes from the West Dallas, and all the other ones come from the City of Milwaukee itself, if you understand the question.
I do understand the question, and actually the way it occurred would be, I think it was approximately 2007 that both West Dallas, South Milwaukee, and the Milwaukee Police Department agreed to give up a portion of the direct Jag Byrne grant allocation so that we could fund a prosecutor that would work in District Number 6 of the City of Milwaukee with also responsibility District Number 2 with a responsibility also to coordinate with South Milwaukee, and then District Number 4 also working with West Dallas. And so that was actually done at the with the collaboration of those three police agencies. And I should add that these additional positions that I mentioned earlier really are only possible because of the support of the City of Milwaukee Police Department and the City of Milwaukee, and in addition to Dr. O'Brien. So I have to mention that. But they've existed since that time, and so I wouldn't be comfortable telling you that funding is still the same source. So let me just ask Jim Martin briefly, because it's evolved over time.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, I'm James Martin from the District Attorney's Office. As the District Attorney indicated, at one time we had as many as 7 community prosecutors, and then it went down to 5. We now have a total of 6 community prosecutors. We just had one that was reinstituted with community block grants from the City of Milwaukee. So the breakdown right now is that we actually have one through a federal grant. We have 3 community prosecutors through the Milwaukee County Burn Jag grant that we've talked about. And we now have 3 that are funded through City of Milwaukee community block grant.
Okay.
And then, as District Attorney Chisholm indicated, we also, it appears that we're going to get funding for at least one additional community prosecutor through a grant that the City of Milwaukee just received, which means we'd be back to the 7 community prosecutors that we had a few years ago. So we'd have one assigned to each police district in Milwaukee with auxiliary service to South Milwaukee and West Dallas.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That really helps. Let me start off by saying I have great respect for D.A. Chisholm, and your wife actually teaches in St. Francis, my district. I always appreciate the job you do. And I know I asked a couple tough questions last year with regard to the division or branch of government. You're in the first branch of government, the executive. This is the legislative branch. It appears to me, and you can disagree with me if you like, but it appears to me that there are forces attempting to politicize your office at times with some very difficult decisions that are made from time to time. And I won't get too specific here, but even with regard to records, I mean, this board passed an ethics rule that said very basically... We are here in the courthouse. When we are here in the courthouse, we are doing the county work, as opposed to trying to define when our political office takes effect in terms of, you know, doing that kind of service out in the community. Because you're really in office 24/7. And I learned that lesson when I got a call at 5:30 in the morning on the Patrick Cudahy fire. I was in service at 5:30 in the morning. So a very easy ethics rule as to when we are doing our job is when we're in the courthouse. And that's actually the ethics rule after, if you recall, our colleague Joe Rice revised the ethics rules. So with regard to records that are kept in the courthouse, it seems to me that those are valid documents that the public has a right to obtain. And there seems to be a position taken recently with regard to John Doe proceedings that public records are not going to be accessible to the public. And I would just like to ask if there's a policy emanating from the DA's office on that.
No, the policy that I follow is to follow the law, Supervisor Jurcik, and the with respect to that, I still am constrained in the degree of specificity I can talk about that issue. But with respect to, there clearly is now of record a distinction to be made between what you would consider traditional records that everybody would understand as being public records and records that can be generated now that fall in sort of a gray area through you know, significant advances in technology that allow people to, you know, for legitimate purposes to provide more effective services to their constituencies, but also pose the risk of creating documents that are not easily found through open record sources. And that is an issue that is in play with respect to the John Doe investigation. So all I can indicate with respect to that is that there is a very significant public policy interest in maintaining the integrity of the John Doe proceeding so that individuals can be held accountable without necessarily being exposed or embarrassed publicly, particularly if they are not directly involved in that investigation. And that's why the system was set up as it was set up, so that you could further investigations without necessarily embarrassing or exposing people or disrupting the integrity of the investigation while that was proceeding. So that is why certain matters remain sealed, certain matters remain confidential. However, there's also a process in place for at appropriate times for those things to be released.
I would just ask, why not let the judge make the orders with regard to what's sealed and what's not sealed?
He actually is doing that, and there are several matters that are before the court, both the Court of Appeals and the judge related to the John Doe, and he makes those decisions on a case-by-case basis.
And so there does not seem to be a need for a policy within the DA's office when it comes to records generated within and on the grounds of the courthouse. I mean, I'm just pointing it out. Sure. It seems to me, and I just think any elected official who's at the courthouse and who's sending emails has no right to expect privacy in that regard. So I just want to make sure we don't politicize your office, and I hope you agree with that concept.
Oh, I agree with it 100%, I have publicly, and I certainly hope through the track record of the office will indicate that I view my responsibility first and foremost is to uphold the law and to enforce it in a fair and impartial manner and to make sure that we maintain the integrity of the criminal justice system. I will not, under any circumstances, make decisions that are based on certainly my own political self-interest. I will not do so under any circumstance.
Thank you very much. No further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chisholm. Supervisor Romo West and Lipscomb.
Thank you. I first want to start off by applauding your work on the domestic violence. I think it's wonderful, and the more I travel within the United States and learn more about other people and what they're doing with domestic violence, the more I am proud of what we are doing in Milwaukee County. It's by no means perfect, and we did earlier this year send a resolution to the state of Wisconsin asking that they take a look at enforcement of the laws, because the great thing about Wisconsin is that we have so many great domestic violence laws, but when it comes down to the actual application of those laws, as we saw in Brookfield, unfortunately, you know, there's a lot of inconsistency, and so that's one of the things that this board has made a public statement and said we really need to get everybody on the same page, and enforcement of these laws is so important. But I really want to applaud again all of the work that you've done with domestic violence and with witness protection. And I do feel like we lead the way in the state in those things, and that's to be acknowledged, and you should be very proud of that. In regards to the, and forgive me because I'm going to date myself now. So back in 1989, when I was in my first year of college, we had to do an internship 40 hours in the semester, and I did mine at the House of Correction. And I did it within the workforce development area because that was the area I was the most interested in, was corrections and workforce development. And we had an absconding unit. And so I'll never forget this because it's kind of like these hearings. So every Wednesday night, we went out with the absconding unit. And what I mean by it was done, it's kind of like this committee says you were done when you were done. And so you were done either because you had a physical body in custody or you were done because you had exhausted all of the leads. So you started here and you ended up here. And if you didn't have anybody, you didn't have anybody, and we used that information the following Wednesday. But every Wednesday we went out looking for someone. And so I was a little disappointed and actually kind of alarmed that we don't do that anymore. Because I think in order for the House of Correction really to have meaning, it has to have teeth. And if you have people that you're sending out for work, to look for work, and they're not coming back, or you have people who are just straight up escaping and we're not looking for them, then that gets out, information gets out into the community, and then you have people really kind of belittling what the House of Correction should be all about. And so I do think that's important. I think kind of the gray area for me is, and I understand that we don't all get along. Unfortunately, we kind of get faced with that every day. But I guess my inquiry really is who should be doing that? And again, I have all respect for the district attorney's office and your investigators, but being very involved with the CPU in my district, being very involved with the other work that you're doing in regards to domestic violence and witness protection, I just feel like your investigators probably have better things that they could be working on versus performing a function that I know the sheriff used to do and believe that the sheriff probably still should do. So do you have any comments on that?
I think you have to believe in evidence-based practices in order to support different policy changes. In other words, I am firmly convinced that community corrections is public safety, pure and simple. It has to be elevated to the exact same level of respect and integration and collaboration that we provide our police partners, our court partners, the Department of Corrections, which is traditionally looked at in the concept of reentry back into our community. Well, our local community corrections plays an absolutely vital role in addressing all of the criminogenic needs that result in repeat victimization and repeat incarceration for different reasons. You have to have a system that essentially all believes in that model. I know that Superintendent Hickman does believe in this concept, and he understands that you can achieve greater levels of public safety and greater levels of accountability at a much lower cost. And a component of that has to be a law enforcement arm that will quickly address problems that occur as you're doing that. I think so. There's something of a philosophical. So the request is coming from people who believe in that, who want their system to work. They don't want to fail. They don't, and they want to work with partners who also believe in the same things. And I think that's why the request is coming here. Is I think there is a philosophical difference on the effectiveness of evidence-based programming and other things, and the use of what I consider to be absolutely vital public safety resources like our our community resource center and other things, that our day reporting center, other things that prepare people for coming back into the community in an accountable way. So there has to be that close collaboration. My investigators have it. There's no reason that other agencies wouldn't be able to develop that as well. But I think that's why the request is being made as it's made now, to be very blunt about it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to qualify just by saying again that it's not any slam on the work that you guys do. It's just that I've sat here for 9 years knowing that you're squeaking by the skin of your teeth, sometimes not squeaking by at all, and we've had to, have had to help you out. And so I think it's exciting that you're going to get these investigators, but again, I want to make sure that that's the best use and that you feel like it is, and from what I hear you say, that you do believe that. And so thank you very much for your time.
Supervisor Lipscomb.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The idea of the transfer of the absconder unit from the sheriff's office to yours, it's been sold as sort of neutral, that we're just moving money, I think was said. And but I mean, is maybe this is for the administration, since it was their proposal, you're accepting it, but it's their proposal. Isn't it sort of dishonest to represent it that way, that with this unfunding, when in fact there are filled positions? So aren't these, shouldn't these more honestly be shown as abolishments? You've got positions that have people in them, but there won't be any money for them. So clearly the sheriff can't keep all of those positions, so why wouldn't we represent it more transparently?
Mr. Pudge?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, speaking to the technical side of it, the positions in the office of the sheriff are unfunded, and the new investigators in the office of the district attorney are newly funded. So it's not like it says those positions are being transferred. It does say, I believe, in the text, basically that the function of absconder unit is being transferred from the office of the sheriff, sort of a broad, policy thing. And that we basically transferred the levy from the office of the sheriff in 2013 to the office of the district attorney. So that sort of answers the technical aspects of it.
But the effect in the sheriff's department will be what? When you unfund filled positions, what do you expect the action to be?
Chairman, the positions are abolished upon vacancy, so if the sheriff would like to keep those deputies, he can fund them within his own budget.
Okay. Fine. I find that less than honest or transparent budgeting, because it sort of pretends that there's no effect in the department from which you're removing the funding. But in terms of the DA's office and if they are to get those positions, what is your expectation? I think Supervisor Haas sort of asked this about the numbers and how many incidents are you thinking you're going to respond to. But sort of what is the usage, what level of usage do you expect this team to be putting into the absconder service versus what will be available to you to supplement other activities? Because obviously they're not doing this full time.
Well, Supervisor Lipscomb, it will depend on the volume, obviously. But we've talked to the House of Correction leadership and collaborated with them very closely on this. And there, if I can go through some detail with you, you'd have actual physical escapes from the House of Correction, like climb over the wire. That's mm-hmm. very, very rare. Mm-hmm. You'd have House of Correction inmates who are on electronic monitoring and cut their bracelet. Mm-hmm. That's happening fairly often. I will leave it to the assistant superintendent here to answer that more directly. You also have inmates on electronic monitoring who violate the conditions of their monitoring, like they go outside of a geographic area, for example, or they don't report back when they're supposed to and time-wise. You have inmates who are on bracelets for SCRAM, which is alcohol monitoring, and an inmate can consume alcohol, and that would be a violation. So we might know exactly where the inmate is, but they're in a tavern drinking, and so they need to be apprehended, brought in. We've also talked about the people who are failed to report to the House of Correction to begin their sentences. Those are cases that we are not currently going out on because we don't have the resources as currently staffed. But that's a case where there's a significant volume of people that just don't show up, and those need to be addressed. And then we also talked to the House of Correction about doing random Huber checks on inmates who are released for work release and things like that to make sure that they're at their job, that they're doing what they're supposed to do as the conditions of their work release. After those things, and those are all House of Correction centered.
How many more you got?
two more. After those things, we would do random checks of domestic violence, no contact orders, in collaboration with our witness protection unit. That has proven to be a very effective method in the past of trying to enforce these matters. And we would also assist in locating wanted subjects who are wanted by our witness protection unit and by the DA's office in general.
Okay. So you do believe there's additional capacity inside of those positions to take on things beyond sort of the traditional absconder role, but things that align with other activities?
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we've had a pretty thorough discussion of this particular topic, and I'm sure the Sheriff's Office might have things to say about it, too, when they come to speak. Supervisor Stamper, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize if I missed this earlier. Are those existing bodies, or will you be hiring new investigators?
I would hire new investigators.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you for your time. Next item.